Reri ndini jonga kande miri.
Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, January 7th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Heavily armed police officers today evicted more than 200 families from a farm in Mazoe District to pave way for First Lady Grace Mugabe, who reportedly wants to establish a game reserve.
What's happening now is that in defiance of that court order, our clients have reported that they are being evicted, and they are being evicted forcibly by members of the Zimbabwe Republic Police.
Six villagers in Chisumbanje area have been arrested for allegedly destroying property worth thousands of dollars belonging to ethanol producer Green Fuel Private Limited.
Six people were actually arrested, and that they had been assaulted. And I had the opportunity to go to the police station at Chisumbanje, and I actually got there, and what I saw was baffling.
And the Bulawayo City Council has passed a resolution to resume water disconnections for residents owing money in defiance of a High Court order last year declaring the practice unconstitutional.
Heavily armed police officers today evicted more than 200 families from a farm in Mazoe District, Mashonaland Central Province, to pave way for First Lady Grace Mugabe, who reportedly wants to establish a game reserve. Reporter Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Police officers, who were allegedly acting on the orders of Mrs. Mugabe, evicted the families from Arnold Farm No. 10. The First Lady is currently in the Far East with her husband, President Robert Mugabe, who is on his annual vacation. She was not available for comment, together with her aide de camp, Lawrence Kamwi, one of the affected resettled farmers, who spoke on condition that he is not identified, told Studio 7 that some uniformed members of the police and the Secret Service had been visiting the farm since last week, advising them to leave to pave way for the First Lady, who allegedly wants to set up a game park on the property. The affected farmer complained that they were being evicted at a time when they had planted their crops, adding that they would not be able to have any food supplies. Following the destruction of the homes by the police today, some of the affected farmers also said their personal belongings are likely to be damaged as they would be exposed to the harsh conditions of the weather, while many children will not be able to attend classes when schools open next week. One of the lawyers handling the case, David Wofisi, who works with the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, says the lawyers' organization has dispatched a team of legal practitioners to the farm in a bid to stop the evictions.
Yes, well, the information we have is that we've got our clients whom we secured in order for in March 2014, which was confirmed in August, basically that they couldn't be evicted. It was just a restatement of the legal position that they cannot be evicted without a court order, and that they cannot be moved from the farms until they are allocated alternate pieces of land with valid offer letters. So what's happening now is that in defiance of that court order, our clients have reported that they are being evicted, and they are being evicted forcibly by members of the Zimbabwe Republic Police. And so what we have done is to deploy our member lawyers to handle the matter.
Officers said the evictions were illegal because there was a court order barring the forced removals of the affected families.
It's really symptomatic of the rule of law challenges we have been raising all along. And it's the sort of thing we should have died down with the introduction of a new constitution and a new constitutional order, because, as you rightly say, it's a rule of law challenge. There's a standing court order, and so it's open defiance of a court order, and there are real questions as to how officers within the police can, if as alleged by our clients they are proceeding in defiance of that court order, just how they can proceed to go against what is an order that they are aware of and that was confirmed by the High Court.
Mazowe West legislator Fortune Chasi and Mashonaland Central Provincial Affairs Minister Martin Dina said they were not aware of today's evictions, while National Police spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba, said she was waiting to be briefed by officers in Mashonaland Central Province before issuing a statement. At the end of last year, Mrs. Mugabe said she intends to build a university in Mazowe District that will be named after the president. At that time, Dina promised her land in the province for any business venture. The Mugabe family has a vast business empire in Mazowe, ranging from farms and a school in the district. One of the farms was grabbed from High Court Judge Ben Hlatshwayo. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Six villagers in Chisumbanje's Shinyamkwakwa area have been arrested on charges of malicious damage to property in a dispute over boundaries with ethanol producer Greenfuel Private Limited. The villagers' lawyer, Langton Mungu of Mungu and Associates, alleges that his clients were severely beaten up while in police custody to the extent that they need medical attention. The six, Samson Mugovera, Kez Mugovera, Chipo Chiripinda, Vainan Lovu, Edmond Lovu, and Hassan Simango were arrested yesterday for working in fields that the villagers and Green Fuel have been fighting for since the company was set up a couple of years ago. Mungu says the villagers could hardly walk and he has been trying to have them taken to the local hospital. Studio 7 failed to reach the police member in charge, Emist Nyamuzingwa, as his mobile phone was not being answered. But Attorney Mungu tells Studio 7 that he is pressing to bring his clients to court tomorrow.
I can confirm that I received a complaint to the effect that six people were actually arrested and that they had been assaulted. And I had the opportunity to go to the police station at Chisumbanje. And I actually got there and what I saw was baffling in that, in fact, I first saw blood scattered in the charge office. Then I had to request to see my client. One of the women could not even walk to the toilet. She had to crawl from the charge office to the toilet upon request. I am going to challenge the detention of the accused person because the Constitution does not allow a suspect to be assaulted or to be treated in an inhuman manner or in any manner that is arbitrary or contrary to the safety of the suspect, as happened in this particular case.
Did they manage to identify the officers who assaulted them?
This is a very simple and easy matter in that the accused person were arrested by the police officers who had gone to arrest them. They know them. And it is also easy for us to know who did that because those who were on a mission to arrest them are the ones who are responsible for the assault.
That was lawyer Langton Mungu of Mungu and Associates on the phone from Chisumbanje in Manicaland province.
The Bulawayo City Council has passed a resolution to resume water disconnections for residents owing money in defiance of a High Court order last year declaring the practice unconstitutional. The council announced today that they are taking these drastic measures as the local authority is owed $90 million by residents, a situation that is almost crippling their operations. It says this debt has shot up from $70 million, which has been outstanding for more than a year. The council did not make any reference to the court order. The High Court ruled last year that it is unconstitutional to cut off water supplies for residents without alternative sources of the precious liquid. Reacting to these reports, Roderick Fayayo of the Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association said the council should discuss this issue with residents instead of going against the court order blocking the disconnection of water supplies to defaulting ratepayers.
Eight Mutare families whose houses were swept away by floods recently are mulling a lawsuit against the city council and a property developer who built their houses amid concerns the structures were constructed on unsuitable land. The eight are part of 60 displaced families in the area who lost their homes and houses to raging waters around Christmas last year. Human rights lawyer Arnold Tsunga says the situation remains dire for the displaced families. He tells reporter Ntungamili Nkomo somebody must pay for settling the eight families on flood-prone land.
There was a severe destruction of properties. There was a destruction of homes. There were a lot of injuries, and many people had to be evacuated. 20 families were evacuated to a primary school called Murawa School under the auspices of City of Mutare. And then about 40 families were internally displaced but within the community and looked after by relatives. So what has been happening basically is that I've been coordinating with the churches and a number of leading civil society leaders here to offer relief support to the internally displaced people. So they've been providing food, blankets, furniture, clothes, and it's just been an overwhelming support from a small group of willing citizens led by Gertrude Chimanga and Pasmo Nyakureba. So I'm very proud of the people of Mutare for that.
Are there any plans to help these people rebuild once the flooding situation is cleared?
Yes, there's plans to do that. But the main concern about eight things that were improperly allocated by the property developer, Mr. Maruni, and City of Mutare, because these things were allocated in areas which are essentially a waterway, and so it's inhabitable since you cannot construct buildings in that area.
Human rights lawyer and Mutare community leader Arnold Tsunga in Mutare, Manicaland Province. Meanwhile, hundreds of families on low-lying areas across the country remain on edge amid reports more heavy rains may be on the way.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Zimbabwe strongly defends the selling of baby elephants to other countries.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
At least 12 people are dead in Paris in an attack on the offices of the satirical weekly paper Charlie Hebdo. French officials say three gunmen opened fire inside the newspaper's offices. The suspects remain at large. Magazine director Stephanie Charbonnier and at least three cartoonists were killed.
Security officials say a car bomb that exploded outside a police academy in Yemen's capital has killed at least 30 people and wounded 40 others. The blast in Sanaa occurred today as people were gathered outside the building.
Uganda's military has confirmed that a man who turned himself in to U.S. forces in Central Africa is a top commander of the rebel Lord's Resistance Army. Military spokesman Paddy Angunda said Wednesday that Uganda confirmed Dominic Ongwen's identity and he was being held in the Central African Republic town of Obo.
And Indonesian search and rescue teams say they have found the tail section of Air Asia Flight 8501, which crashed in the Java Sea on December 28th. The head of Indonesia's National Search and Rescue Agency told reporters today that the tail section, which contains the so-called black box voice and flight data recorders, was found after officials announced an expansion of the search area Tuesday.
Zimbabwe today defended the sale of baby elephants to countries like China, saying it was above board and the country has more elephants than it can handle. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from the capital city, Harare.
Addressing journalists while announcing a $100,000 Royal Netherlands Embassy sponsorship deal for Zimbabwe's participation at that country's forthcoming international travel and holiday fair, Tourism and Acting Environment Minister Walter Muzembi said Zimbabwe has an overpopulation of elephants and selling them is one way of reducing their numbers. Muzembi said the international lobby against Zimbabwe's sale of baby elephants was just cheap politicking.
It does look like a lot of politicking at face value from the initial reports that I have received. Clearly, it is not a secret that our habitat is not designed to carry too many elephants in its environment now, as it were. We have an overpopulation of elephants.
Muzembi said the sale of the elephants to countries that offer appropriate habitats was in line with international treaties, adding the money raised would be used for animal conservation purposes. He said the other way to deal with elephant overpopulation was through handing trophies, but noted that the country could not go that route after the United States issued an executive order banning the importation of elephant trophies from Zimbabwe last year.
We appear hamstrung by the executive orders arising out of the U.S., which are in effect sanctions against the country, and yet we are supposed to raise money. Conservation should look after itself from its own proceeds. That's really the philosophy.
The minister said he would respond to all those who have petitioned the nation, urging Zimbabwe to stop the elephant exports, and admitted that the negative publicity on these issues is harming tourism. Meanwhile, Muzembi commended the Netherlands government for supporting tourism in the country, saying the sponsorship for Zimbabwe to participate in its international trade fair next week would enhance Zimbabwe's marketing drive in Europe.
And as we celebrate the manifestation of this positive engagement with the government of the Netherlands, we want to make a clarion call to other European countries to emulate the good example set by the government and Kingdom of the Netherlands.
Netherlands Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Gerard Schneller, expressed hope that participating at a country's biggest travel and holiday fair would bring more tourists to the Southern African country.
It will support Zimbabwe, it will support the tourist sector here, but it will also support Dutch business in the Netherlands. And that is what we're looking for. We're looking for win-win situations.
She said the sponsorship was made possible under a country's new approach of supporting the private sector. Zimbabwean tourism operators would exhibit at the fair, which begins on the 13th of January. Thereafter, they would have roadshows in Netherlands and Belgium to market Zimbabwe as a tourist destination. But Muzembi said all these efforts would come to naught if Zimbabwe does not align its tourism prices to regional standards.
This year, if we don't begin to fix the issue of pricing, we'll continue to sell the destination, we'll sell the weather is no price, okay? But the actual product, which is the hotel room that the tourists will come into, will still be out of sync.
He said, Muzembi said it was puzzling that when the price of fuel was going down globally, in Zimbabwe it remained high, adding he would discuss the issue with Energy Minister Samuel Undenge. This, he said, was affecting tourism seriously as one of the international airlines that had returned to Zimbabwe after years of absence, KLM Airlines, pulled out last year over the high cost of Jet A1 fuel. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Over many centuries, the African patriarchal system has allowed men to dominate women. Culture, customs, and even laws have endorsed men.
Across the African continent, discussions about raising children are focused mostly around mothers. Fatherhood is often excluded, but as the continent braces for a spike in birth rates over the next 35 years, attention is shifting to the impact of Africa's patriarchal culture on families. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Over many centuries, the African patriarchal system has allowed men to dominate women. Culture, customs, and even laws have endorsed men as all-powerful. This is even true in South Africa, with the most advanced laws on equality on the continent, but where traditional attitudes persist. Men like Trevor Davis, director at the African Fatherhood Initiative, describe this as toxic masculinity and want to end it. Davis argues that the assumed male domination has led fathers to neglect their duty of raising children together with their wives. Studies here indicate that 46% of children in South Africa below the age of 12
are growing up without fathers. And Davis says this means they lose 50% of the parenting value they should be getting. With more women working out of choice or necessity and taking up more traditional male roles, Davis argues men need to re-examine their part in family relationships. He says fathers should be more involved starting from childbirth in feeding, bathing, changing nappies and being more affectionate. He adds that nurturing does not make a man less masculine, but a better contributor to the society.
The type of society that I see us moving to is one in which men are expected to be well-behaved, strong men who value their families and their communities.
Justin Kwena is a father of one. The 34-year-old helps his wife Ketele do all the house chores, including cooking. He also spends most of his time with his 4-year-old daughter, Tumelo, watching her favorite cartoons and playing with her. This, he says, has created a strong bond between him and his daughter.
If your wife is tired, give her a helping hand. She's your helper, not your slave. Children should know that the father is not someone who just sits on the sofa and watches TV, but he also runs around with them, gives them a bath, plays with them, talks to them, helps them with homework and things like that.
35-year-old Alet Mazwi is a proud father of three. He jumps on any opportunity to join his children in playing even the most silly games. Like a preacher at the pulpit, Mazwi makes a passionate call to other fathers to be involved in their children's lives.
I say, fathers, if you want to play with your children, they will also want to play with you. If you push away your children, they are also going to move away. And if you distance yourself from your children, it is not a happy home. Bring your children close, you are going to have a good time.
And Davis says, if all fathers were to be like Kwena and Mazwi, South Africa could transform into a more equitable society where respect and care are core values.
If we start to engage men over the next few years, I think we can see less violence in communities and particularly less violence against women and children. A much gentler society is what I'm after, but one in which men are still strong, but we use our strength to care for those who are weaker than us and who need our protection.
Davis says every father has a crucial role to play in shaping the lives of his children and emphasizes that this is the most effective way of making toxic masculinity a thing of the past by raising a new generation of naturally strong, loving fathers. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In our sports segment today, Caps United today unveiled Englishman Mark Harrison as its new coach, with former player Fungaito Staokwashi coming in as assistant coach in a technical team that also has club legend Brenham Siska as goalkeeper's coach. Harrison takes over from former coach Taurai Mangwiro and is expected to lead the team into securing the premiership title. Harrison's credentials include being a goalkeeper for English Premiership side Stoke City and coaching Golden Arrows and Black Leopards in the South African Premiership. Caps United spokesperson Joyce Kapota tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mthlanganyawuye she hopes fans will give the new coach a chance to help the team clinch the Premiership title.
Today we appointed Mr. Mark Harrison as the head coach and his two assistants, Mr. Brenham Siska and Chestaro Kwashi.
Tell us a little bit about this coaching department. Where is your national coach coming from?
Mr. Harrison was working from South Africa, but is of British descent. Brenham Siska has been an assistant coach over the years, plus is a former Caps United son. Kwashi used to play for Caps United, so he's back again.
But we used to see in the past that there was a love-hate relationship amongst your former coach and the fans. What are you urging your fans to do this time around?
We are asking from our fans to be patient with the new technical system and then for them to support the new coaches, because without their support, they cannot do anything.
And how long are the contracts that have been signed by these new coaches?
We gave them 3 years contracts.
And also, what are your hopes as Caps United for this coming season?
We will not not wanting to put pressure on our coaches, but like any other team would want to take the league. But they're working on a 3-year plan, so we're not putting them under any pressure whatsoever.
That was Capes United spokesperson Joyce Kapota speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye in Harare.
Meanwhile, more sports news. Zimbabwe's new cricket coach Dave Watmore today named a 15-man squad for the Cricket World Cup in February. These are Captain Elton Chigumbura, Sikandar Raza Butt, Regis Chakava, Tendai Chatara, Chamunorwa Chibaba, Craig Evan, Tafadzwa Kamungozi, Hamilton Masakadza, Stuart Matsikenyere, Solomon Mire, Tawanda Mupariwa, Tinashe Panyangara, Brendan Taylor, Prosper Utseya, and Sean Williams. And now the big question tonight is, does this team have what it takes to bring the World Cup home? Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo posed that question to sports analyst Muziwethu Hadebe.
People will be expecting that most of the guys who have been selected will go on to perform very well. But the coming back of Matsikenyere is expected to give a little bit of boost to the team. He has been doing very well in terms of the lower class of the cricket. And also, Sean Williams is always in and out of the team and comes back. And he's also expected to play a key role in the Zimbabwe team alongside Utseya as well. So not much changes. I think what the selectors have done here is to go for experience in as far as Zimbabwe cricket is concerned.
What do you make of Prosper Utseya's inclusion, given that he is under ICC bowling sanctions?
I think it's a great opportunity for Utseya, and it's also a lesson, I think, to all the cricketers that these downfalls do happen in the game of cricket. But if you pick yourself up, if you go through these rehabs that they conduct when such instances happen, you can always go back to play cricket. And it will be expected that then Utseya will go on to shine for Zimbabwe at the World Cup.
And that was sports commentator Muziwethu Hadebe on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo from Bulawayo.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will talk to you, listeners, about issues that you wish discussed here at Studio 7.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. And now to recap today's top stories.
Heavily armed police officers today evicted more than 200 families from a farm in Mazoe district to pave way for First Lady Grace Mugabe, who reportedly wants to establish a game reserve.
Six villagers in Chisumbanje area have been arrested for allegedly destroying property belonging to ethanol producer Green Fuel Private Limited.
And the Bulawayo City Council has passed a resolution to resume water disconnections for residents owing money in defiance of a High Court order last year declaring the practice unconstitutional.
That's our broadcast this evening.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night, Zimbabwe.